I hope you're all well this morning. Welcome to Cafe Church. This morning is all about doing church a little bit differently, being informal and interactive. So feel free this morning to get up and help yourself to tea and coffee that's on the go. Help yourself to some breakfast. Make yourselves at home. Move around a bit. That's fine. That's what it's all about this morning, okay? We're going to be doing a whole load of different things this morning and getting you guys involved and talking and hopefully being really interactive with each other around your tables. That's the idea. And we'll explain a little bit more as we go along. Let's just pray as we start, shall we? Father God, thank you that we can all be together this morning. We just pray that you would speak to us in the way that you do this morning and just be in this service. And Father, would you just just bless our time together in your name. Amen. Before we kick off, I think we've just got a few notices. Let's get them out of the way. Have you got some? Cafe Church is happening today. Feel free to come along. Oh, you're here. Okay. This is something we're going to hopefully try and do every so often, maybe once a month, maybe once every sort of 6 weeks, and try and do a sort of more informal church that's available for everybody to sort of come along to, and you can bring friends along to, and it's going to be nice and informal and interactive. Remember that all of these services are online, so if you want to catch up with what Phil has been talking about, then you can go online and you can listen to that while you're running or in the bath or whatever you're doing. You can catch up. So go online, do check that out, and make sure that you catch up on the series, Is God Big Enough, that we've just finished, which has been really, really interesting, and it's been a real challenge to me, and I'm sure each of you in different ways. So yeah, catch up on that. Junior Church is happening today outside in the back hall, so they're going to be going out very shortly whilst we're in here. And that's going to happen each time we do Cafe Church. We're going to do Junior Church at the same time. So if you come along with a family, you can take the kids out and they can go and have their own sort of church out there, which is going to be great fun today. Prayer meeting Wednesday here. I don't know anything about this at the moment, but it will be a great event. Phil is organising that this Wednesday. And please feel free to come along to that. One of the things about the prayer meeting that we're really keen to see is even if you can only just pop in for half an hour, don't feel like you can't come because you're going to be late or you need to leave early. Please just come along, drop in. It's really, really important that we pray as a church. So if you can make that, please do just drop in between those times and just try and pray. If you can be here for the whole thing, great. But if you just can drop in and just pray for a short time. And Phil always does that in a really interactive way. So it's not just a matter of all sitting down sort of somberly, just silently praying. He tends to get you sort of moving around a little bit. And it's sort of an interactive and different creative ways of prayer. Yeah, so do come along to that. On Friday, we have our next movie night here, Friday night. Film starts at 8 o'clock, doors open 7:30, and tickets are just £4. And there is bar and refreshments going as well. Really, really great event. And this is a fantastic thing to be able to invite friends, family along to, neighbours. Come along. It's going to be a good film. Phil recommends it. It's called Florence Foster Jenkins. Phil recommends it. So if you don't like it, it's a good film. We're getting lots of good films. Okay, everyone's saying it's a good film. So there you go. So that is this Friday. Okay. So, young people, you get to now leave us and go to your cafe church. Sorry, Mandy, just getting into a coffee. The young people, if you want to go out, have a fantastic time. Okay, as the young people go out, I am going to just hand round your first challenge as you're kind of, Phil's going to. So the first thing we're going to get you guys to do is to, you need to be on a table with at least another person so you can join another table. And we're going to give you this first challenge. So sitting around a table, we have a lifeboat challenge for you. It's all written out on here, so you can read through the instructions. Hopefully, it's very straightforward. Well, the instructions are very straightforward. And as a group, there's some questions at the bottom that I want you to discuss and see if you can work through and see what your outcome would be. And then we're going to discuss that in a minute. Okay, so maybe designate one of the people on your table to maybe read it out. And then we'll come back to you in about 5-10 minutes.
Hey guys, 22nd of October.
People go, let my people go. Light a fire in the dark, a fire in the dark. Let my people go.
He had dreams and hopes, and it seems it's been stripped away. He has heaps of pain running through his heart, and it shows, cause he don't know that he's worth much more. He got stolen and sold, not sure where the future would take him. Now a slave and he feels forsaken.
Somebody come to the rescue.
We don't wanna sit down and watch this. We wanna stand up and see justice. We'll do what we can and trust him.
Let my people go. Let my people go. Light a fire in the dark. A fire in the dark. Let my people go. Let my people go.
For the deepest depths of the darkest
let
times.
Let my people go.
And it seems it's been stripped away. She has dreams of tears running down her cheeks, and she can't see that she got potential, a purpose, a future. She wants to run, but she's nervous. She stays and stares at them curtains, and she's searching.
Somebody come to the rescue.
Yeah.
Somebody come to the rescue.
We don't wanna sit down and watch this. We wanna stand up and see justice. We'll do what we can and trust it.
Let my people go.
System.
These are your sons and daughters, God.
Lord, take the stage, you'll save the day in the greatest way.
Rescue your sons and daughters.
All around the world, we see the lives and hear the cries. We realize that
these are your sons and daughters, God, 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 God.
Let us light it up and shine it bright. And now the time.
We hear the cry. Let my people go.
And wash away my sin,
nothing but the blood of Jesus.
Okay.
Okay, how you doing? I think somebody reckoned they'd sorted this and saved everybody. This table over here, for some strange reason, believes they've sorted everything. But Don came up with it, and now he can't remember what he said, which is a real problem, isn't it? But no, that's not fair. Right, what was it?
Okay, so what we got to was we couldn't decide who we'd save, so we thought we'd save everybody. So the thing we'd do first off is work out who could swim and who couldn't. So all the people who couldn't swim we'd put in the boat, and all the people who couldn't would either hold onto the side, or we'd have some ropes and they'd be towed along. So we'd save everybody. That was Don's idea.
Genius. Now I want to know, did anybody save the priest? You rotten lot. Cannot believe you did that. But I put him in deliberately to see what would happen. So I thought, yeah. So there you go. Any others? What else have you got? Anybody got any ideas? Stick your hand up. I'll come to you. Yeah. Loads.
First thing to find out is this: where is the boat that's happening? I mean, are we near the side of the?
Are we on land?
Are we near land? In which case, if we're only a few meters away, we just get everybody up, get out. And... So that was the first thing. We may not be out at sea. So when we've got that, we'd. Yes, well, we were similar. We did really work out that if it can hold 30 people, they may well be 30 life jackets. So people who aren't so strong swimmers but could swim, they could have the life jackets in the water, and then 30 people could be in the boat. So that would give us 60 people could be covered.
Oh, cool. Very good. All right. That's cool. You've got loads down there. And is there one other point you want to make? Any other? What's the big one?
We throw out the fat people.
What?
Because they throw out the fat people because they've got more buoyancy and they last longer, so we might need to eat them. Oh yeah, and we're definitely keeping Bear Grylls.
All the ladies are keeping Bear Grylls. And that was really sizist. I don't know what's going on here. Anybody over here got anything you want to share?
Rules for getting in the boat is one in, one out.
That makes sense. One in, one out. If you're not prepared, yeah.
One in, one out. And if you've got to get in from the same, from opposite sides, I'll tip the boat over.
Yeah, that makes sense. Logical. Anything else you want? Anybody else? Oh, we got loads. Hang on. Did you say what? You see, Debbie, you see, there you go. You ought to be the priest, really. So let's pray.
To confirm for an appointment.
The doctor can phone for an appointment. Well, fair enough, I suppose. Well, Bear Grylls can look after himself. That's a good point, is it?
Right, a question. Should I stay sitting in the boat or jump out to give somebody my place?
Crucial question, isn't it? That is a really crucial question. Okay, we got one more.
We said we'd definitely save the sailor with the nautical skills.
Okay, yeah.
Someone with the knowledge.
So you're going with practicality, about skills based. We'll help those people who can help us. That's a good point. You don't want him in your boat because he's obviously not got a good track record. So there you go. Yeah. Okay, that's brilliant. Now, you may have guessed the theme that we're going to talk about today. It's quite a serious theme in an odd sort of way, but we wanted to start off by helping you think about some of the issues. And the issue we want you to chat about and think about and maybe pray about when you go home is this whole issue that's happened and started in 2015, is this European immigration crisis. It's still going on. And we thought, as Christians and as folks who are interested in just world issues and what's going on, that it'd be good for us to think about this a little bit and pray about it and ask God what he thinks. So that's what we're going to do. So let me give you some hard facts. Can you click through for me, Ben? There's a little clicker there. Let me give you some hard facts about what's been happening. Now, oddly enough, yeah, give it one more. That's great. Oddly enough, it didn't start in 2015, which is when the real crisis started hitting the headlines. There's a little island in the Med called Lampedusa, and it's an Italian island. It's got 5,000 people in, and on that little tiny island of 5,000 people, tens of thousands of refugees have been turning up since 2013 in fact, more multiplied exponentially the number of population on the island they've had to deal with in Italy. And that was where the initial sort of flow came from. It came across from North Africa and was coming across to Italy. And we know in 2015 things changed because Syria, the Syria crisis really hotted up. And the flow of people moved from Italy to Greece. I think the next one, give us a little. Oh, no, okay. Yeah, there you go. That tells you where the flow went. There was a real burst of immigration going on in 2015. Started in January, but just escalated by October. You can see the numbers there. And Italy was in green. Initially, Italy was bearing the brunt of it, but now it's changed to Greece. Greece are in green, sorry, there, and Italy in yellow, in orange. They were fleeing persecution. Most were refugees. There is a difference. There is migrants, those seeking a better life, and refugees, those seeking safety and a place from protection from persecution or war. There are two types of people moving around the globe at the moment. And what were the triggers? Next slide will tell you some of the triggers. And those are the trigger spots. It's all over the world. This is not just Syria. This is all over the globe. Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan are the three main refugee flows to Europe right now and have been in 2015. Somalia, however, Darfur has been going on. I've been praying about Darfur for 10 years. It hasn't stopped. And people are getting out of Darfur now, and they're heading to Europe. Libya, you know the problems in Libya with the revolution there, and all the flow coming out of Libya as well. Other places, people are leaving not just because of conflict. All those places, by the way, are all about conflict. But Eritrea is one of them. That's another big flow from Eritrea, and that's because of the repression in Eritrea. You're forced to join the military in Eritrea, and it's open-ended. You don't get a choice of when you leave again. You are there until they let you go. They even force labor in Eritrea. You are forced to work for the government, whatever they want you to do. It's a very repressive regime. So that's one of the reasons people are getting away and running away. Total displaced globally in 2015. Any guesses how many around the globe, how many people were displaced because of economic reasons or because of conflict? Any ideas? Give me a number. 30 million. Well, no, it was double that. It was 60 million people around the globe were escaping from these difficulties. That is more than in World War II. And you think of the conflict in World War II and the number of people who were displaced. More than in World War II have moved around the globe last year. Between 2015 and 2016, over 1 million people made the journey. Most of them did that. They crossed the Mediterranean, usually from Africa, from Libya particularly, and they just crowded into boats. One of the reasons that Lampedusa got involved, and the mayor there said, we have to do something, we have to help. You know why? Because one night in 2013, a boat capsized, killing 350 migrants. They washed up on the shore, and they tried to rescue as many as they could, and they couldn't. And just because they saw that, they responded. They said, we're not just going to close our borders, we're not just going to ignore you, we're going to do something. That little population of 5,000. EU member states, you may think that we take the brunt of immigration. We don't. Next slide will show you. Out of all the EU member states, there are four countries that are, I believe, being incredibly generous and gracious right now, and it's not us. It's Germany, Hungary, Sweden, and Austria. They are represented by the top four colours in each of those columns, and you can see they are taking more than double what everybody else is. They're taking huge numbers of people. EU member states received 1.2 million applications last year. 1.2 million people escaping conflict and poverty. That's double the previous year. We'll put them on the website if you want. I'll put them on the website. Yeah. it's good to know the facts, I think, because we think we're quite good in the UK. But actually, compared to Germany, Angela Merkel was on the news this week. Did you see that? She's facing a lot of pressure now because she is very generous to immigration. And I think, bless that woman, she's great. She's really good. So it's not just Europe, though. Little click on, I think. Oh, no, I'm not slow to that. Okay, not just Europe. Did you know that other Middle Eastern countries are bearing the brunt? The tiny country of Lebanon on the Syrian border alone has 1.2 million refugees have moved in that one country. They've all moved in because it's on the border and it's safer than staying in Syria. Jordan has 650, over 500,000 people have moved in. And these are small countries compared to us. And they are trying to help these people who are escaping violence. Okay, so I want to ask you, what's your response? And round your tables, have a little chat. What is your response to the situation? I've got some questions up on there, but feel free to talk about questions that you might have. Here's what I want you to talk about. This one I want you not to avoid. Don't duck this. Everybody on your tables, ask this. What are your feelings? And when I say feelings, I mean feelings. Are you sad? Are you angry? Are you scared? Are you afraid? What is your feeling about this? I'm doing a counselling course at the moment, and one thing I know, nobody talks about feelings. Talk about how you feel about this situation. What are your fears about it? What are you worried about it? Because everybody is. I think that's worth acknowledging. There is fear everywhere about what's going on. Everybody's worried about it, no matter what they say. And you can't ignore that. That is reality. What do you think the problem is? And what's the solution? Now, that's easy, isn't it? But what do you think the problem is? And what do you think the solution? Now, solution, there are two parts. What's the short-term solution? Because you have to react to what's happening now. But what's the long-term? What does our world need? What's the long-term? So have a little chat around your table about the crisis, how it affects you, how it's affected you. Maybe you've got some stories, but talk about some of those questions. Off you go.
Go. Let my people go. Light a fire in the dark, a fire in the dark. Let my people go.
He had dreams and hopes, and it seems it's been stripped away. He has heaps of pain running through his heart, and it shows, cause he don't know that he's worth much more. He got stolen and sold, not sure where the future would take him. Now a slave and he feels forsaken.
Somebody come to the rescue. Somebody come to the rescue.
We don't wanna sit down and watch this. We wanna stand up and see justice. We'll do what we can and trust him.
Let my people go. Let my people go. Light a fire in the dark, a fire in the dark. Let my people go. Let my people go.
From the deepest depths to the darkest
let
times.
Let my people go.
Find our breath and share the light.
Light a fire in the dark.
A fire in the dark.
Let my people go.
Let my people go.
And it seems it's been stripped away. She has streams of tears running down her cheeks. And she can't see that she got potential, a purpose, a future. She wants to run, but she's nervous. She stays and stares at them curtains, and she's searching.
Somebody come to the rescue.
Yeah.
Somebody come to the rescue.
We don't want to sit down and watch this. We want to stand up and see justice. We'll do what we can and trust it.
Let my people go.
persistence. All the victims trapped in the system.
These are your sons and daughters, God.
Lord, take the stage, you'll save the day in the greatest way.
Rescue your sons and daughters.
All around the world, we see the lies and hear the cries. We realize that
these are your sons and daughters, God, 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 God.
Let us light it up and shine it bright. And now the time
we hear the cry.
Let my people go.
Bless the Lord, oh my soul, oh my soul. Worship His holy name. Sing like never before, oh my soul. I worship Your holy name. The sun comes up. It's a new day dawning. It's time to sing Your song again. Whatever may pass and whatever lies before me, let me be singing when the evening comes. Bless the Lord.
Okay. Right, we've given you about 4 minutes to fix the world there, so I'm hoping, I'm probably being a bit optimistic. Does anybody want to make a comment? We've got time for a couple of comments. We haven't got time for too many, but anybody want a quick comment? Yeah, Monica? Hang on, I'm coming.
Problem. And but I do know, because I suppose I've got more time because I'm retired, that when you look at the figures, this country gives a lot of money to help people where they are.
Yeah.
Because in the end, people would really like to stay where they live. So it's very complex. You can't just say we're not giving anything, because we are. But that's one little factor, and I can't give you the figures, but you might find it. But I think you'll find we're giving a lot more than a lot of countries in Europe.
Yeah.
But that's some... But it's a massive problem.
That's a really good point, though, isn't it? It's about, that's part of the solution, isn't it? Foreign aid, does foreign aid matter? It really does, because you know, you're no longer isolated now, and if you ignore the rest of the world, those problems come back and land on your shores.
I think there's also the fact that there's a mentality worldwide of it being our country,
And the sooner we start to realise that it's God's country and it's nothing is ours, then we're going to be more embracing.
Oh, good point. Like it. Yeah, stewardship. God has given you this, but it's not yours. It belongs to him. Great point.
Yeah, we were saying something similar about demonstrating. If we say we're a Christian country, we should behave like one. Maybe 10% of income to God's work or goods work as a nation. Also, cancel the Greek debt.
Yeah, debt. Debt will be driving a lot of this stuff. It certainly is in third world countries. Debt is killing economies, yeah. Okay, anything? Any other comment, guys? You want to make one more? You all right? Excellent. Okay. I thought I'd show you a little clip which sort of illustrates the point, and I like this clip. Have you ever seen the film 2012? 2012, it's one of those one. My wife loves disaster movies. I don't know why, but she loves a good disaster movie. And this is a disaster movie. In 2012, we've missed it, obviously, we're still here. But the plot was, in 2012, an ecological global disaster hits. And the nations get together and quietly and secretly build arks, literally arks, big steel arcs, in order to save as many as they can. And they have a little bit of a bidding process, and a bit like your lifeboat. Who do we let on? Who do we have to leave behind? And how do we get as many on as we can? And they had that whole debate. So in the film, this is the point when the arcs are about to launch, but there's a problem. One of the arcs has been damaged. So now there is a whole crowd of people on the quayside wanting to get on, and they're about to be left behind. What do they do? Here you go. Have a look at this.
Support mechanisms.
Aye, aye, Captain. Engaging Bowie for support.
Just exactly how long are these things expecting to hold us in place, Captain?
They're just meant to withstand the first impact of the waves, Mr. Anheuser.
Convince the other heads of state to launch.
Mr. Anheuser, we have to stop this madness. Make sure the other bridges do see me. What do you think you're doing?
I know exactly what I'm doing. Turn it on. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Dr. Adrian Helmsley, chief science advisor to the late president.
Could you please turn up the volume, Mr. Hoffman?
I know we've all been forced to make difficult decisions to save our human civilization. But to be human means to care for each other, and civilization means to work together to create a better life. If that's true, then there's nothing human and nothing civilized about what we're doing here.
Dr. Helmsley's passion is admirable, but I will remind you
that we have very limited resources and extremely limited time.
Ask yourselves, can we really stand by and watch these people die?
I read a quote 2 days ago. The author is probably dead by now, but he said the moment we stop fighting for each other, that's the moment that we lose our humanity.
And in order to save the human race, we have an obligation to stick to this plan, which every nation on this flotilla has signed off for. They're in God's hands now. Officer, you turn that off. That is an order, sailor. Turn it off!
Don't you dare touch that button, young man.
Have you completely lost your mind? Look at the clock!
We have barely 15 minutes left!
Do you want to be responsible for the extinction of the human race? Can you handle that, Adrian?
There's a young astrophysicist from India who's the reason we're all here.
Oh, for God's sake.
He's the one who discovered it all. He connected all the dots. We all owe him
our lives. I just learned that he was killed with his family in a tsunami in eastern India. He was my friend. And he died in vain. Everybody out there has died in vain if we start our future with an act of cruelty.
What will you tell your children? What will they tell theirs?
If my father were here, he would open the gates.
The people of Russia are all with China and Japan agree to open the gates.
The United Kingdom, Spain, France, Canada, Germany. And I believe I may also speak for the Italian Prime Minister. We vote to let these people come in.
Captain Michaels. Please.
This is the captain.
In a few moments, we will open the gates. Get you people there.
There you go. Isn't that always the dilemma when you have limited resources and time, and yet there is this overwhelming need looking you in the face? What do you do? What does it mean to be human? What does it mean to be society? What does that word mean? It means working together. It doesn't mean looking after number one. I love that clip. It's great. Have a look at the film. It's good fun if you like a good disaster every now and again. But quite frankly, Europe in 2015 hit one and it's not finished yet. So what's our response to that? Ben's going to show you maybe a little bit more of a personal angle on the whole situation.
So I don't know if, like me, you just sort of hear the news here and there and it's hard to sort of get a real grasp of kind of why people are leaving the places they are. And I think I had a bit of a view of, well, you know, especially the guys, they should go back and they should sort of fight for their country. And I saw this book, Castaway. I don't know if anyone's read this. Has anyone read this? Debbie's read it. So she can vouch for this as well. But I saw this at my uncle's house and I said, oh, that looks really fascinating. And he said, well, it's my holiday read, actually. I'm taking it away on holiday. I was like, okay, nice book to take on holiday. But he came back and he just handed it to me and he said, right, have a read of this. And I have to be honest, I'm only halfway through. But if you want to find out why people are leaving and risking their lives to get over to a place where they're safer, then this book is a whole load of testimonies of people's story coming from Syria, Africa, Afghanistan, that kind of area, all over the world. And I couldn't believe the things that people are fleeing from, Gaddafi and his regime. But these people, they were either going to die, basically, or they could try and live. So I would really recommend this as a read. Debbie, you'd recommend it as a read? Okay. But yeah, I'd recommend a read. Come and have a look at it if you want. Take the author's name and title and have a read. I've just got a story for you to read, to listen to, which is just a testimony I found. So I'm going to read this to you. It says, Fez el-Sharar was sure he was going to die. He was walking to work in his hometown of Daraa, the southern Syrian city, where the protests against President Bashar al-Assad first erupted. For young civilians like Fez, now 28, leaving his house in the spring of 2013 had become a game of Russian roulette. Dozens were dying each day in the civil war between Assad's forces and anti-government insurgents. The ancient farming town of Daraa had become a grisly battlefield. Dissidents had disappeared. Children had been plucked off the streets for suspected anti-government activities, only to be tortured by the authorities. On that Tuesday morning in late March, Fayez was confronted by a group of Syrian army soldiers. They were looking for a man who had been spotted with a handgun. Fayez and three others were detained and accused of being terrorists. Standing at gunpoint, his hands in the air, he recalls feeling furious with himself for risking the solo walk to work. "We felt death upon us and we accepted it," he says now. "I can't describe it in words." He got lucky. At that moment, an old woman barreled into the street, begging the gun-touting soldiers to spare these men. They were her son, her nephew, and her neighbours, the old lady pleaded. Fayez had never seen the woman before, but the soldiers relented. The stranger saved his life. By the time Fayez returned home that night from his job at the healthcare company, he had resolved to flee Syria. He talked it over with his wife, informed his mother, then reached out online to an underground group known for smuggling Syrians into Jordan. Again, Fayez was fortunate. The smugglers had a spare space in a private car to carry him and his wife to the border the next day. The couple packed their bags with clothing, photos from their wedding, and a few keepsakes, a set of coloured bowls they had received as a gift, a glimmering gold plate inscribed with Shahada, the Muslim profession of faith. The following morning, they walked out the door and left their life behind. That's just one person's story. And there are millions of people who have similar stories, who have lives, who have jobs, who are well-educated, who have incomes and homes, and they have to walk away from the whole thing. And they give up everything, all of their money, to be smuggled over to somewhere where they feel that they can keep their family safe. That's the reality. And it is... It's a scary and sad reality. What we want to do is, I've got a couple of sheets that I want to just hand round to you. One is a poem, which you can read round, so maybe one of you can read that to the group, and then also some psalms. And just for a few minutes, sort of five or 10 minutes or so, I just want you, in your tables, just to read those to each other and just have a moment of reflection. It's easy to sort of hear the news or, you know, hear these things, but sometimes we don't let it necessarily absorb us. So as a bit of a prayer, as a bit of a kind of, just a bit of a ponder on this, just read those to each other and just spend 5-10 minutes just talking about that in a group.
Child who lies still beneath his mother's eyes, she's asking why a God of love would give and take away. For every self-made man doing everything he can to fill the void that's deep within, eating at his soul. Thank you. those who walk the street, destitute and desperate. We shake our heads and wash our hands, but hurry on our way.
Through his heart, and it shows, cause he don't know that he's worth much more. He got stolen and sold, not sure where the future would take him. Now a slave and he feels forsaken.
Okay. Some lovely stuff there. Some words from the Bible. And there's also that poem, which it almost forces you to make a decision, doesn't it? Which one do I want to be? Do I want to be the one that reads from top to bottom? Do I want to be the one that starts from the bottom and reads up. So what do we want to be? Talking about the crisis, I don't know if you remember, 2009 was a significant moment in sort of remembrance history, because the last Tommy to serve in the trenches died in 2009. You remember his name? Harry Patch. Dear old Harry Patch died. And there was a fear, I think, around when Harry Patch died, the last veteran in the trenches, is, will we remember? Will we just repeat stuff because now nobody remembers the past and nobody lived through it to remind us never to do that again? The Book of Deuteronomy is a great book, and some of the readings that you've got, and if you want to read about what God thinks about the stranger, the foreigner, the Bible calls it the alien, that person who is not from among us but comes among us, and how do we respond to that, someone very different from ourselves, Deuteronomy has a lot to say about that. It's a wonderful book. It was written in 1407 BC, 1,407 years before Christ, 3,500 years ago. And it was written to a bunch who were in the same boat. They were the last generation to leave Egypt had died. So you'd had the Exodus, you remember Moses and parting the Red Sea and leaving slavery in Egypt and creating this new nation called Israel. And all that sort of started, but it wouldn't be complete until they walked into the Promised Land. And then they had the challenge, we start a nation. They had a blank sheet. What do we want to be? How do we want to respond to the rest of the world? What is our calling globally? Literally, that was their question. And at the beginning of that, Moses got them on the banks of the Jordan before they crossed over into the new land. And he said, listen, the previous generation who needed to remind you about things have gone. So I'm going to do it. I'm going to be the voice of those who have passed on to remind you not to make the same mistakes. And that's what he did. And he reminds them where they've come from. Where did the Israelites come from? Slavery. And he reminds them about a golden rule that Jesus quoted in the New Testament. He said, treat others as you would have them treat yourself. Interestingly enough, that statement is in every major world religion on the planet. That statement is one that Jesus also uttered. And he was saying to Israel, you were slaves. You know what it's like to be a foreigner? Because you were in Egypt. You know what it's like to be treated harshly and cruelly and without justice and without rights. You know, well, that's right. But the generation that lived in it are gone. So I'm going to remind you what that looks like. So that when you start your nation and the foreigner and the alien and the person who's not like you comes among you, how are you going to treat them now when you think about how you were treated then? And the whole book is wonderful because it talks about all sorts of rules and regulations, but they're really about how do we live as a people? How do we live as the people of God in this world? How do we make a difference right where we are? And how do we respond to all that? So there's all sorts of wonderful passages. Deuteronomy 10. Listen to this. He defends the cause of the fatherless and the widow. He loves the foreigner residing among you, giving them food and clothing. That's what God does. That's a real challenge, isn't it, to our Western society at the moment in the light of overwhelming need. What I find scary is this. Listen, I'm a Christian, and it says God defends the fatherless and the widower. That means if I don't, which side of the equation am I on with God? What does that do with my relationship with God? If God is defending them and I'm not helping, that makes me the problem. That means I'm setting myself up against God. Never do that. Never put yourself on the other side of the fence from God, because he is a bit bigger. Is God big enough? We've been talking about that for weeks, haven't we? He is big enough. And as a Christian, you always want to be doing what God's doing. You don't want to be in opposition to that, because he is defending them. And if it means he has to defend them against you, he will. He will. He defends the orphan and the widow. That's a challenge to me, a massive challenge. But Deuteronomy 24, Deuteronomy 27, all has references to God giving justice to those who come among you who aren't part of your people. There's all sorts of things been written about this, and there are some by people who've traveled the world and do it for a living, and are speaking on behalf of a Christian perspective, but I think they have a lot to say. David Kerrigan, who's the General Secretary of the BMS, Baptist Missionary Society, travels all around the world visiting and establishing mission projects as part of the BMS. So he's seen the world. He knows what it looks like. He says this, our response, what's our response? Well, first acknowledge the fear. There is fear. That's one of the, I wonder if that's why we left Europe. I think that's a driver behind that. There is fear. And I think you can say, well, that's irrelevant, but it isn't, because people are afraid and you need to acknowledge that, and that's fine. Avoid stereotypes, he says. Don't do that. Stereotypes, stigmatizing. Amongst almost all of the people who come to the UK, come to work or study or escape. The vast, vast majority do that. And despite what some of the tabloids may tell you, the most people who come to the UK come to study, work or escape. Show compassion. Well, that goes without saying, from a Christian perspective. If you consider the instability, think about it for a moment. If you consider the instability, the violence, the corruption in our world, is compassion towards someone who just wants to get out of that, is that too much to ask? If it were our kids living there, we would say, get out, wouldn't we? We'd say, go somewhere safe. Is compassion too much to ask for a natural response to want a better life and a safer life? I think that's normal to want those things. He'd also say, consider the past. You know what? In the UK, as well as the US and the EU, we're wealthy nations. How do we obtain that wealth? Why are we wealthy nations? Yeah. And it's not that we just made that wealth on our own little island. We made it through an empire that we controlled. And we benefited. Our wealth comes directly from most of those nations that we've been talking about. And we've been involved in all of them. Syria, Iraq, Africa. We've been involved in all of them. Does the UK owe a debt to those who now are in need? It's a good question. Do we owe a debt? And there's also some benefits. You know what? There's some amazing benefits that you may not know. I'm a Christian, so I have to look at this, and Ben's probably encountered this at college, but you know what? Some of the most vibrant, missional, passionate churches in London right now, and they're huge. They're in the thousands, some of the congregations. You know, there's a huge number. They're all ethnic minority groups. They're black churches. Churches that come and build up from North Africa and places like that where people are fleeing. And they are doing amazing thing in the UK in reaching people and describing the gospel to people. That might not happen quite as much if they hadn't got here. Is there a benefit as a Christian? I wonder, you know, you look back and you think, I wonder if God was using that. I don't think he caused it. But the Bible does say, doesn't it, that God is able to use even failings and mistakes and sin. He can use it and turn it around for good. So I wonder, I just wonder as a pastor whether something is happening in the UK because of the migration that's going on. But there is another side of the coin, and I need to say this because this is another guy, and this guy is Nabil Costa in the Lebanon, and he runs a little organization, well, quite a big organization that is about social benefit in Lebanon. It's a charity, an NGO. He's a Christian, but he has a concern about immigration. And this is the other side of the coin that you need to consider. From his perspective, immigration means, and he says this, he says it means losing our best to the West. And you've got to factor that one in as well. At a time, he says, when in the Lebanon they need peacemakers, They need people with an ethic of reconciliation. He says we're losing these people and they're getting out because of the violence and the poverty they're experiencing. He says those who come to the UK to study, fantastic. The trouble is they stay. The doctors, the nurses, the teachers, the people who build societies are not returning to their home countries to build it there. And as a person whose NGO is all about building society, his concern is that he cannot develop better governance, education systems and stronger societies if the children don't want to come home again. So something about creating stable countries abroad. And it takes us, but it also takes those who live there to create that, doesn't it? And for a sense of call to do that. So that's just another side of the coin, which we probably don't think about. But both are relevant, aren't they? Both matter. There you go. We're torn, I think, between compassion and consequences, between our heads and our hearts when we talk about this sort of stuff. I'd encourage you to read some of those passages in Deuteronomy. I'd encourage you to think about your response. And we want to close with a little bit of that, don't we? What's next on the agenda, Ben? What we got? Is it about our response? It is, isn't it? What can I do? We actually want you to do something this morning. Over there is a laptop. On that laptop is a petition regarding about 360 kids that are currently in what's called the jungle, which is the camp in Calais, which they're talking about closing down in the near future. There are at least 300, there are actually 1,000, but there are 360 kids in Calais right now, this morning, who qualify to come to the UK. They have no parents with them, they're on their own, and they qualify right now, and nothing is happening. Nobody's getting them. Nobody's bringing them over. And there's a petition here to say, dear government, let's do something now. Let's bring them over. It's over there. You can sign up online. Benji's
going to say. I was just going to say, I met up with Penny last week. Remember, some of you know Penny from Ebbsfleet over there? She went over, I think, a week and a half ago to Calais with some other religious leaders, so some guys from the Jewish faith and stuff. She said she bought herself a dog collar. And what they had done is they had said to the authorities in France that all the paperwork is there for these 360, 370 children. All the paperwork's there. They have a right to now come over and be with their families, but no one was actually going and getting them. And they said, if it doesn't happen, then we're all going to go over as faith leaders, and we're going to go and do a stand-in. So she bought herself a dog collar, and she went over with 20 others, and they went and did a stand-in in all of the authoritative kind of centres around Calais to just get a response. They're starting to see some movement, but it'd be really good. It still hasn't happened, and they're still over there at the moment, but they actually, all they need to do is go and get a coach and bring them over to their families over here. So, I'm just letting you know, really, that Penny's involved in that, and I've got a first-hand account from her that, you know, of what's going on.
Penny's a... Well, hopefully they get reunited with their family, or they get somewhere to go. The UK has a system where they'll allocate safe places. Yeah. Well, some churches, certainly bishops are starting to do that. One bishop said, I've got this, bishops tend to have large places, don't they? Let's face it. You know, and they've got these palaces, literally. And one of the bishops said, you know what? I've got some spare room. Send them over. It would be an interesting task if anybody knows. I don't know how you do that, but is there a way? Is there a way you can say, I've got a spare room? Is there a way? Why not? Have a look. Joe, if you find anything out, let us know. We'd love to find out. Is there a way you can directly get connected so that you can be a place where people can come? Yeah. Okay. It sounds like everything's in place, but for some reason it hasn't happened. So this is a nudge. This is a nudge that we can make this morning to those who can make that call. Yes, it's going to happen. We can't do that. for all sorts of legal reasons, but they can sign the paperwork. So sign up if you want to. You can sign the petition. It's online. There's other things. Ben's just going to hand round a sheet. It gives you ideas of organisations and charities and NGOs and organisations that are working right now related to this crisis. What they're doing, and the trick is get informed, isn't it? So maybe you want to get, hopefully, stick a couple on the table. Ben's got some spares if you need a spare, but that might be something you want to take home, do a bit of research, get online, have a look. It's a great resource, and find out what to do. One of the charities we support annually is on there. Tier Fund is on there. Tier Fund work all over the world, but they're also working in Syria right now and trying to deal with some of the fallout in Syria. You might want to support that because that's one of the charities that we want to encourage this year. So Tier Fund are getting involved. Find out what they're doing. Joe? You were just waving your hand? Oh, for a sheep. Okay. So there are some ideas, but there is something you can literally do this morning. I'd encourage you, if you can, sign up online. That would be great. Okay. We need to end there. Yeah, just to let you know, we haven't taken it because it's Cafe Church and we're doing things differently. There's been no offering this morning. If you'd like to make a donation, yeah, Derek's scratching his head. He's got the bag in his hand, look. How old habits die hard. Yeah, so he's got the bag, but there is a basket. Derek, there's a basket by the door. So basically, if you want to make a donation, either for your, you don't have to pay for bread, but if you want to, you can. You don't have to. We just buy it. But if you're a member here and you want to support the ministry here, then you normally give an offering. If you'd like to just put it in the basket on your way out, that'd be great. That'd be fantastic. Thoughts to go away with. Do some research. Find out what's going on. Find out what organizations are doing. Maybe you can get involved. Great question. What if I've got a spare room? Now that gets really personal, doesn't it? Joe's going on holiday. Well, that sort of ruins it, that does. Okay. But those are good questions to ask. Here's a thing I want you to think about. You know, we talked about lifeboats a lot this morning, about rescue and helping people, and that we've got that place of safety and they haven't. I want you to think about something. Your home is a lifeboat. Have you ever thought your home is a lifeboat? You have a place. I suspect it's fairly safe. I suspect it's a good place to be. Are there people down your street who need a lifeboat? Are there people in your village who need a lifeboat? How can you? The Bible says practice hospitality. It basically means welcome and encompass people in your own families and homes. Are there people different from you that you can do that for? Maybe it's a neighbor. Maybe it's a neighbor who's so different from you, but you could show grace and love. That's the only way any barriers come down, isn't it? It's the only way it works. Somebody has to show grace and love. And until they do, the cycle of separation just continues. So I'd encourage you, your home is a lifeboat. Let it be a lifeboat. Let it be a lifeboat to your neighbors, your friends, your communities, and challengingly, those who might be different from you, because you have a tremendous resource. That is your life, but you own that. Can you use it? That's a little takeout as you want to be practical this morning. Thank you for coming. Bless you. We're going to hold another one of these on the 4th of December. All right? 4th of December. Invite your friends. Otherwise, we'll see you on Friday for the film, or we'll see you on Wednesday for the prayer meeting. And we'll pray about some of the things we've talked about today. All right. Bless you, folks. Thanks for coming. Joe.
and that we serve.